Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guests today are Stephanie Fennessy and Julian Fennessy. Together, they are co-founders of the Giraffe Conservation Foundation, the only NGO in the world that focuses on preservation of giraffes in the wild. Between them, they have more than 30 years' experience protecting giraffes. So first, I would like to thank you for your work, and second, I'd like to thank you for being on the program.
Thanks, Derek. Great to be on it.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
So I guess can we start just by introducing who are giraffes and perhaps their range prior to colonization and their numbers prior to colonization, and then move from there to the things that have happened to them?
So giraffe, obviously, are one of the most iconic animals in the world. I mean, everybody loves giraffe. I haven't heard from anyone that says a bad thing about them. You know, they are unmistakable. They are tall. They are obviously the largest animal on the planet currently. So what we find with giraffe is that they are used as tools to be able to symbolize everything from kids' toys and apparel all the way through to World Cup football. So everyone loves them. Everyone knows them. But importantly, what we're finding is that giraffe obviously are in a little bit of peril. So we estimate about 100 to 200 years ago that probably about 1 million giraffe at least roamed across the African continent. It's quite a number of animals, and you know, their range was approximately 28 different countries in Africa, all the way through Western Africa, spread across Central Africa, South the Sahel, through to East Africa and down through Southern Africa. They weren't in the Congo because of the big forests, so they have a cousin there called the okapi, which is also not doing so well, unfortunately. But giraffe in general, we've seen this great decline in numbers, and estimate they've probably gone extinct in at least 7 countries in Africa so far, and numbers likely are under 100,000 currently today.
And what is, I kind of hate using the language of utilitarianism, but what are their roles in natural communities? Like, one of the roles of salmon is to move nutrients from the ocean up into a forest. And one of the roles of elephants, to my understanding, is that they sometimes help to sort of break up forests. So what do giraffes do for their wild communities?
Giraffe are actually quite similar to elephants, that in some areas they're really landscape changers. They feed at a level where no other animals feed, so they really coppice some of the trees and shape the trees. They are also pollinators. They will eat seeds and then disperse them in their poo and bring trees in areas where they normally where they didn't grow before, because they're also their feces is really full of fertilizer. So actually, every seed comes with this, each little fertilizer pack.
And in nature, who are some of their primary predators?
So I mean, giraffe. The bottom line, the biggest predator giraffe over the last 100 years is humans. So that's been the major decline. And we can discuss that a little bit later, I'm sure. But natural predators apart from humans, lion is the big one. In some areas in Africa, lion are known to take at least 50% of young giraffe in their first year. So this really controls the population booming in some areas. But they've also been recorded to be hunted by leopards in many areas across Africa, not in large numbers, but it does happen, by cheetah, very much to a lesser extent, crocodiles, and there has been some recordings of potential being killed by hyena and by wild dog, but that's extremely rare.
But what is really interesting is that a lot of people think giraffe are so big, so they can't actually be hunted by any predators. But for example, here in Namibia, where we live in the northwest, there is a pride of lion who have specialized on giraffe. It used to be 5 young males who really specialized on giraffe, and they would just hunt a giraffe every week, basically, and then they would feed on it for a week and get the next one. So yeah, it happens more often than people think.
And what are the local giraffe populations able to handle that? Okay, how quickly do giraffes reproduce? What's their lifespan, etc.?
Lifespan is actually a really interesting question. A lot of people ask us that, but we simply don't know. We don't know how old giraffes get in the wild, because there is simply no one who can tell me that this giraffe was born this year and died of natural causes in another year. There has been no long-term research study on giraffe that can actually show this. We know that in zoos they get approximately 25 years old, but we are not really sure if they get older or die younger in the wild.
So I think that's it's really interesting that, and you know, we assume we know everything about, you know, everything, and this being the most, you know, the tallest animal in the world, we would assume that there's been so much work done on it. And that's why, you know, when we started looking at giraffe a few years back, we were surprised as an Australian and a German. It's like, you know, why hasn't everyone studied all of this? So, you know, by understanding how old they get, that's one of the critical things that we're just starting to try and set up some long-term studies to figure out, you know, how many years do they live? Because as Steph says, you know, it's 25 basically on average in a zoo, but there's been recordings of in the early 30s giraffe have lived to. So, yeah, hopefully we could learn a little bit more. And obviously, you know, that's why, you know, we want to work with so many partners across Africa to try and figure out, you know, is it the same here in Namibia compared to that in Kenya or in Niger in West Africa?
And what about reproduction? How quickly do they have babies? How quickly do they sexually mature? And then how often do they have babies? And are they single or twins or triplets or what?
We estimate that giraffes are sexually mature when they're about 3 or 4 years old. They have a gestation period from 15 months, so that's pretty long, and normally they only have one calf. There is a few reports that giraffe had twins in zoos, but that is really, really rare. In the wild, we often see one mum with two or three calves, and people think it might be twins or even triplets, but experience has shown us that that's not true. It's actually mums who look after other calves when other mums go feeding.
Yeah, and I was going to just add to that, in places like Niger, in West Africa, the number of giraffe in the mid-90s was down to 49 individuals in the whole region, which is extremely low. But we've been following them and working with partners, and the numbers currently are estimated at 550. So we've had a growth of essentially 12% per annum, which is an amazing growth rate. There is no predators. You know, apart from the odd human killing a giraffe, but they get in a lot of trouble these days. But there's no lions because all these giraffes live in community areas. So we're seeing really high reproduction rates of giraffe in areas. So as soon as that 15 months over the gestation, some of them are coming basically on heat again immediately. Whereas in other areas like Namibia, we're seeing what's called the postpartum period as approximately, you know, 6 to 12 months. They have a bit of a rest, which is, you know, good on them, I reckon.
So that's really fascinating to me, because I interviewed somebody about koalas and somebody about wombats. And I believe in both of those cases, they reproduce very, very, very slowly. And so there could not have been the sort of recovery that you're talking about. So basically, if left alone, it sounds like they can recover fairly quickly.
No, and I mean, before I start, wombats, I'm an Australian, and wombats are my favorite animal. So that's nice to hear. But, yeah, no, we are seeing in populations of giraffe booming. I mean, they can breed really well. In southern Africa, you know, there's different conservation management regimes going on, and a lot of it is small private game reserves, and it seems every one of them almost these days have giraffe, and you know, the numbers are getting really big on some of these farms. So it is positive. If there is good conservation management activities, giraffe numbers can boom, but unfortunately that's not happening in, you know, in the majority of their areas across East and Central Africa.
Well, in a moment, I want to get to the threats, but there's a couple more things I want to talk about first. One of them is, so what are their social groups like? Are they matrifocal? Are they sex segregated? I don't have any idea. Are they in huge herds? How do giraffes work?
Yeah, that really depends where you are, where you look at them, and who you believe. Because, again, there is just very little known about this. No one really has taken the time to watch giraffe for an extended period of time and really understand what is going on. We assume now that they have a fission-fusion relationship. So it means they come together, hang out for a while, and then they split up. In some areas, for example, in Uganda, you can see huge herds of giraffe, up to 50 or even 100 individuals hanging out together. They are males and females mixed. Here in Namibia, you see often single males and then female groups, but there might be some young males hanging out with them. So it really depends. We don't have any conclusive data that can show us that we can say this is how giraffe hang out. Furthermore, we have no idea if they hang out, if they are related to each other, or if they are just mates.
And then we also have evidently no idea what they were like 400 years ago. And I say that because I live in California, United States, and grizzly bears are known in the United States for being solitary animals. But early European explorers talked about seeing, quote, troops of grizzly bears hanging out together. And so who knows what they were doing? If we don't know what they're doing now, we probably know even less about what they were doing 500 years ago.
Totally. I mean, this is a snapshot in time. And obviously what we want to do is have some solid baseline that, you know, when 500 years time, when someone reads about hopefully the large herds of giraffe across Africa or in certain parts of Africa, this is what happened in 2017. And that would be nice. So let's just hope.
So once again, before we get to the threat, so tell me more about your work with the organization and without the organization, work being done to study them. What sort of studies are being done by you and others?
I mean, we started with a lot of studies. That's where we come from. I mean, Julian did his PhD on giraffe, and that's where our interest came from, and I basically married into giraffe conservation. But we have moved away from studies a fair bit. We are much more active now in conserving and preserving giraffe because no one else is doing this. So we are a very small organization, and we work with partners all over Africa. We work with governments, we work with other researchers, with NGOs, and we advise on how to save giraffe, because there is not one shop solution to save giraffe. All the situations are very different. So that is our main focus. But in saying that, we obviously still do some studies where we see a conservation value. We don't do esoteric studies just for the sake of studying something. We really want to see a value, and we want to understand things better that can help us in conserving giraffe better.
And so what are the primary threats to giraffes in the different places?
So the biggest threat to giraffe, as it is for most wildlife in Africa, if not the world, has really been habitat loss. So with increasing human populations, there's obviously a need for increased area under agricultural use. Sadly, not always good agricultural use. And this has resulted in a lot of the areas where giraffe have roamed, whether it's seasonally or, you know, during drought years. And they've basically been, you know, sort of limited now to many areas like national parks or the areas immediately surrounding them. So habitat loss is the big factor. But associated with that and with human population growth has been sort of fragmentation of the landscape. So they've split areas. So giraffe now don't feel that they can easily move between landscapes anymore. So as a result, they don't have as high breedings or reproduction. You know, there's limited genetic movement between these areas. So they are sort of the biggest factors. But more recently, we have seen a lot of poaching, illegal hunting that's been occurring in some countries, especially in East and Central Africa. And a lot of that has been hunting for meat, for bushmeat markets, so that a lot of people have been selling it, so obviously to make a living. It used to historically be just sustainable use, so small families, the Hadza community in Tanzania have always traditionally hunted giraffe, but now there's been other groups coming in who are making livings out of it, and it's really had an impact on the numbers. Then Other hunting we've also seen is the use of the tails. So some giraffes, sadly, in places like Garumba National Park in the Democratic Republic of Congo, they've been hunted by some communities just specifically for their tail as a dowry, sort of for a bride, so as a gift for the bride's husband, bride's family. And this has resulted in, you know, sort of selective populations being reduced. And so you combine all of these factors, throw in disease, which we know really little about. Sometimes anthrax pops up in the community, in, you know, populations of giraffe. So all of these factors together have obviously resulted in this large decline that we've seen in the last few years.
And tell me about the decline. What are the decline in numbers?
So we are estimating that in the last 30 years, giraffe numbers have dropped by about 40%. So today we think there is less than 100,000 giraffe remaining in all of Africa. So we always try to put this into context because 100,000 still sounds relatively many. But we often talk about elephant, and everyone is concerned about elephant, and very rightly so. But elephant numbers are estimated at 400 to 450,000 across the continent. So just to put it into perspective.
I want to talk more about threats in a minute, but why giraffes? What made you fall in love with giraffes?
Why not? No, I mean, it's a fascinating thing in that, you know, when years ago when I started to work in Namibia and I started a master's essentially on elephant and giraffe, and I always wanted to study elephants. And I think, you know, many people who love African wildlife or any wildlife, you know, elephants is one of the big things. So, but what we found out is that, you know, the elephant side of things, there's lots of people who study them. There's lots of personalities that also study them. And but what we realized is, as a business deal, no one had really looked at giraffe. So there was really an opening there to look at. And that was how we initially sort of got into studying giraffe and looking at what was going on, and more looking at it, finding out there's, you know, massively, you know, fascinating creatures, and whose we didn't know anything really about their social structure. We didn't know about what their, how they moved between landscapes. We didn't know about their, you know, their numbers or their conservation status. So it started out, you know, as just basic study, but the more and more we've got involved, obviously the more and more passionate we've been involved, and hopefully been also working with others, both governments, non-governments, and, you know, sort of researchers across Africa to get them passionate about helping to conserve giraffe in Africa.
And what is the what is the popularity of giraffes? I know, for example, in the United States that for some insane reasons, wolves are hated, and bison are hated by ranchers. Or a great example is prairie dogs, who are just wonderful little creatures, are just, there's this hatred of them in the United States among ranchers, for example. So what do a lot of people think about giraffes? Do they like them? Or I have a friend who lives in India, and most of the people actually kind of like the elephants who wander through, except they even the elephants can cause a lot of damage if they choose to, and even so, the elephants aren't hated as much as their damage might suggest that some people might dislike them. So are giraffes liked there generally, or are they disliked, or do people just not care?
Now, normally giraffes are liked because but African kids also love seeing giraffe because they're just quirky. I mean, they're amazing animals to look at. They just seem so wrong in their proportions. As you said, elephants can cause a lot of damage. And I always say it's very easy to sit in America or Europe and say we have to conserve animals. But if you have to live with them, it's a totally different story. If elephant come into your village at night and eat all your crops and that is your main livelihood, that's a disaster. And that you can't love animal elephant after an incident like that. They kill people. Giraffe normally don't do this. They might eat a few trees, but they normally don't eat crops. They normally don't attack people. Even if they come into close contact with people, they are much more likely to run away than to attack. So in general, giraffe are well liked. There is no... very few people, I think, who would go out and say they hate giraffe.
And I think you can sort of see the importance is, and, you know, they do socially are valued by a lot of communities, the Bushmen or the sand community in southern Africa, you know, the sort of symbol for rain is giraffe, I think probably because they're so tall, which makes sense. And in Botswana, the Khama family, which is the, you know, the president, Ian Khama of Botswana. So their totem of their family is the giraffe. So they're definitely loved, respected in many of the communities across Africa. And they've just assumed that they're everywhere. And that's why, you know, they are important to people. But, you know, local communities have sort of, you know, many of them have become sort of disengaged with the environment over the years. And so those who are still live closely with the land, like the sand community, they have a much stronger affinity than those who just live in the cities.
But in general, people here in Africa also see the value of giraffe for tourism. I mean, every tourist who comes to Africa wants to see a giraffe. They are no doubt the symbol of Africa. So there lies quite a high value for people in it, and a lot of people have realized that as well.
So for each of the threats that you mentioned, what are some of the efforts to protect from those threats? I guess let's go after the first one, the big one first, with habitat loss.
Yeah, habitat loss is a real difficult one. There's no doubt about that because, you know, human population growth is increasing. But what we're doing ourselves and working with partners is we're looking at landscapes where there used to historically be giraffe, where that they might have been sort of locally sort of exterminated through hunting or disease previously. And we're assessing and working with government and partners to say, can we move giraffe back into these areas? So let's say Uganda. This is a great example. In the last year and a half, we've been able to work with the governments and the Uganda Wildlife Authority to set up two new populations of endangered Rothschild's giraffe. This is something that I think is really tipping the scale for giraffe conservation. It hasn't been, you know, it's been done a lot in southern Africa in setting up new populations for private game reserves. But this is National Park who's taken the initiative. And so now we have two key populations, one now on the south side of Murchison Falls in Uganda, and the other one Lake Mburo in Uganda. So that's a big conservation tool that we're looking at. We first have to assess, is the habitat viable? Are all of these threats now gone? And how can we help work with them internationally, raise the support and funds to be able to help local African governments undertake these translocations?
And how long ago did those translocations take place, and how much of the populations increased?
So this is just within the last 1.5 years, this example. So the one that went to Lake Mburo was 15 giraffe, and we have a steady 15 giraffe to date, although we have a few chubby ones, which is really good. So there obviously are a couple of pregnant individuals, and we hope, you know, with a long gestation period within the next year or so, that we'll obviously have some new births. But what we're finding also with the ones south of Murchison Falls is there's a much harsher landscape. And so what we're feeling is that this was only happened a year ago. We need to supplement that population. So hopefully later this year, we'll be working with the government again to be able to translocate another 15, 20 giraffe to give it an extra boost to be able to hopefully sort of cement a new population. If it requires more in future, we'll keep monitoring it and controlling it. But it's a case-by-case scenario, but this is just the first step. And if Namibia or South Africa is a good example, giraffe numbers can flourish in the right environment.
You mentioned, and I don't remember the name, you mentioned the endangered species. How many species of giraffe are there?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. Traditionally, and still recognized by the IUCN, there is one species and nine subspecies. And this is what is at the moment commonly recognized. But we have been involved in a study that was published last year where we now actually think that there might be four different species of giraffe.
So, yeah, this has been a long-term study. We've collected DNA samples from essentially every major population across Africa, working with partners on the ground. And for more than a decade, we've been able to get all of this DNA tissue samples, because it's all genetic-based, these results, to our partners in Frankfurt in Germany. And they've done some amazing studies, and using what's mitochondrial as well as nuclear DNA, so both sort of familial lines of the DNA, we've seen that, giraffe date back to probably give or take 2 million years. And the four different species that we're proposing, they started to sort of separate anywhere between 1 and 1.5 million years ago. So if we put this into some perspective, the brown bear and the polar bear, everyone knows they're a different species. They look totally different. And they probably separated between 500 and 800,000 years ago. To me, giraffe look very different, these different species. They live in different areas. Likely their ecology is very different, and the environment that they live in, we know, is different. So because it has slightly different patterns, or it looks like a giraffe, everyone, you know, still wants to lump them all together. But from a biodiversity perspective, they are different. And so we're continuing to do some studies. We're looking now at some genome work on the giraffe, and we'll also look at some traditional taxonomy. But for me, taxonomy is a fascinating beast. It's half art and half science. So we want to sort of use some modern day science to see if we can piece all of this together. So when we do move translocation of giraffe around the continent, we don't want to mix them up. We want to really conserve the biodiversity that's out there.
So thank you for that. And I want to go back to this, the habitat question, because it seems like even though habitat loss is a huge concern, as it is everywhere, that in this case, because of, as you said, prior hunting or prior disease wiping out of small populations, that there are places that are, I mean, that this is a tiny piece of good news, that there is habitat that is available for giraffes, which is not being utilized by them. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, no, that's definitely the case. So, you know, Uganda was just one example, but, you know, there is some still large chunks of land across Africa. What we have to get rid of is some of them obviously have other threats associated with it. So it might be poor legislation or monitoring and implementation of sort of anti-poaching. So in Niger, for example, in West Africa, I really think we have an opportunity to, you know, set up some new satellite populations of giraffe. And we've been working closely with the Niger government for many years, and hopefully this is something that will kick off soon. But by setting up these new populations and in protected areas where they're safe, hopefully we can see their numbers, which currently at 550, you know, who knows, in the next 10, 15 years with another population or two, they could easily be 1,000. And I think they are the positive stories. And we always hear about the negative stories about conservation. And, you know, I think it's a mug's game to say that constantly. You know, it's good for fundraising that, yes, we giraffe are in peril, but we need to highlight that. But we need to find those success stories, and we need to learn from them and be able to apply. So in saying that, Malawi historically may or may not have had giraffe. We don't know. There's a couple of little populations that have been set up in the last 10, 15 years, and we're trying to work with the government there and NGO partners to set up some new populations. It'll help tourism, which helps jobs, which helps money for the economy in Malawi. And so these are things we have to look at and provide our best skills and technical support and funding to be able to find these landscapes that historically, we don't know if they had giraffe, but now are really valuable areas to help conserve them.
This is going a completely different direction, but, you know, I'm a long-term activist in the United States, but that's in one country. And is it exciting or frustrating or a nightmare or what to work with all these different governments where you can have entirely different sets of rules? Is that kind of a crazy thing, or is that not nearly as much of a hassle as it might seem?
Sorry, we didn't catch all of that. Could you just repeat that again, please?
The key part was, is it a nightmare to try to work with a bunch of different governments, all of which have completely different rules, as opposed to working in a... So you've mentioned several countries, and presumably all those different countries have different attitudes toward the natural world. And so is it problematical to... I'm just saying this as a longtime activist in the United States, where basically I deal with one large governing organization, and dealing with 27 of them seems to be does that make life more difficult for you?
Yeah, it has its moments. No, it definitely has challenges, and the challenges, are different in every country. So you have to, it's very important to rely on local partners and to listen and really observe what is going on. You can't just come in, barge in and say, this is what we want to do. You have to, get to know each other, figure out what can be done, what partners want, and you find a way to make it happen. But it's definitely a challenge.
And how do you deal with, this is going back to the threats, how do you deal with, what are the plans by either you or by any other organization to deal with the poaching? What approaches are being taken to reduce that threat?
Again, there is not one blanket solution because the situations are very different. For example, in Uganda, in Murchison Falls National Park, there is some poaching. It's mainly people coming over from the DRC and setting wire snares. These wire snares are not even set to target giraffe. They're targeting smaller antelopes like cob. But giraffe walk into them and get injured. So there the government has a very strong anti-poaching policy. They have teams checking for wire snares, removing them. But it's very... It just happens, and they're working hard. In other areas, we get more and more reports from Central Africa and also East Africa that gangs who are out to poach elephant for their ivory, that they don't like to eat elephant, but they like to eat giraffe. So they will poach a giraffe on the side. So that is a very different scenario. That is like organized crime. There is highly sophisticated weapons involved. So that is almost a war situation. It's very difficult to find a blanket solution, but it's not mainly there that we work with governments or other NGOs who are specialized in anti-poaching.
Yeah, I think that's really important. We think of ourselves, we are a small organization with a big impact across the continent. And our best way we can do that is support and work with those already running things on the ground, like governments, like the African Parks Network, who have a suite of reserves where they help, sort of governments manage them across Africa. So what we can do is we can raise a little bit of support to help them think more about giraffe, think more about providing anti-poaching support to giraffe and the habitat that they are. So we don't have teams of people, in an ideal world, we'd have millions and millions of dollars, but we still wouldn't do it ourselves. We would fund others who have those skills and capacity to get on the ground to best be able to try to curb the poaching. One of the things, though, that we did do to try and provide a technical solution was putting GPS satellite collars on giraffe in Democratic Republic of Congo to use them as basically Judas animals to be able to follow them and set the rangers who are then, anti-poaching teams to be able to follow them so that they can be proactive in their managing of them. So that's what we can use our skills and knowledge to provide that advice and support rather than getting on the ground with our boots. You probably don't want us trying to be anti-poaching team. We'd be absolutely awful.
Right. So how many people do you think are working on sort of focusing on giraffe around the continent? Or how many organizations are doing this?
Yeah. Well, From our understanding, we're the only organization that works across the continent on giraffe specifically. What we know, you know, and we work closely, is there is a number of masters and PhD students out there who have been, who have completed or are still doing work, so which is really important to help us understand what's going on with giraffe. But specifically, they're not doing giraffe conservation at all. So I would struggle to say that there's actually many out there. But what we're trying to do is increasing organizations that are already doing a lot of general conservation to actually just embed more giraffe efforts in their program. So let's say in Kenya, for example, so Lewa Conservancy. A week ago, I was up in northern Kenya working with this well-known conservancy who don't have giraffe on the radar. But by sitting and talking with them and showing what's happening with giraffe, they're realizing that, hang on, giraffe are a lot more threatened than they previously thought, and this seems to be sort of the tune going across the whole continent, that let's actually try to do some more giraffe efforts. So how can we help them? How can we support them? So, yes, there's a bunch of sort of little programs happening across Africa. I wouldn't be able to say off the top of my head for giraffe, but they're very specific to a little reserve or an area. But conservation specific is fairly limited, more research based.
You know, what you're saying sounds like a tremendous model for other activist organizations to utilize, where they are working on their primary emphasis and you come in to add that. And it I don't know how much this happens over there, but it kind of makes me envious and also makes me kind of laugh, because so often we see activist organizations getting in turf wars and fighting against each other, as opposed to working collaboratively like that. So that sounds like a wonderful model to try to export to for other people working on, you know, whatever issues, whether their issues are prairie dogs or sage grouse.
Yeah, no, I mean, we just realized we are a very small organization, so we are just only so many people and we have only so many hours in a day. So this is the best use of our time. But obviously it works with some partners and it doesn't work with others. So we have to be honest there as well. It's a ideal scenario and ideally we would all work together. But obviously we are also competing for funding. So in some issues, in some areas, it doesn't really work. But our experience has been very, very positive, especially working with bigger conservation organizations who have a slightly different focus from us.
No, it is really fascinating, though, as you say, that we think it's a good model and we think it's the best bang for the buck at the moment. And, you know, again, last week I sat down with the African Wildlife Foundation, who said, okay, how can we work with you guys? What can you do? What can we do collaboratively to help better understand what's happening to giraffe? It's not high on their radar yet, but it's obviously something that's coming to the fore. And it's nice being knocked on the door and say, guys, what can you provide advice to help us better save and conserve giraffe in Africa? And we're finding this from many organizations internationally and across Africa. And this is, I agree with you, if we could bottle this model and use it for all other species or other activist programs, then obviously we're one step closer to making a real difference.
So we have about 7 or 8 minutes left, and I have a few sort of semi-wind-down questions. And one of them is, if they could make the two of you the, I don't know, the king and queen of all things giraffe in Africa. So you can't get rid of capitalism. You can't, you know, change larger social structures that way. But you can still, you received a boatload of money to start implementing some ideal policies. What would you want to have? What would we see in the next 10 years?
So the biggest thing that needs to change is legislation. And what we need in that is obviously greater protection for giraffe and other wildlife and their habitat. But I think connected to that, and that has to be benefits accruing to the communities and people who live with wildlife. These are the guys who are going to save them in future. It's going to be us, you know, trying to drive a bit here and there, but we need giraffe not just in national parks. They need to move much bigger, larger areas. So one of the big things I would do is, you know, if I had that magic wand, would be definitely looking at legislations, policy, and the implementation of that. Namibia has a great example, and currently 40-odd percent of the country is under conservation protection, including the whole coastline. Half of that is community conservation area where people benefit, especially through tourism. So if we could take this model and somehow adapt it across the rest of Africa, I think it would really make a difference.
Shoot, I was going to ask another question. The other question is comes back to something earlier. What can be done to help make or improve wildlife corridors so that you don't have to translocate giraffes in the future, but they can translocate themselves?
Now, that's a really difficult question. I mean, the main problem is just human population growth. There's more and more people, especially here in Africa, who need more land, more agricultural land to feed the people. So it's just a really, really difficult thing to solve. So obviously through good land management and forward planning to maintain these corridors and make sure there is space before people encroach, that's the only thing you can do there. But reality is that this is going to get more and more difficult in the time to come.
And connected to that, you know, you don't want to have that colonial attitude where it was national parks were locked away areas, and people can't go into them. They can't live there, and this is for wildlife. But we realize that wildlife normally need much larger areas. So if there is to be sort of some redistribution of land, then it obviously needs to come with adequate compensation, but also that everyone agrees that this is the best thing to be done. Because coming in with just an attitude will only get you so far, and we're seeing that in Kenya at the moment. In this last week or two, there's been a lot of incursions, uprising in northern Kenya, where there's been massive amount of influx of herders with their cattle onto white-owned farming land, and that's a real problem. And unfortunately, wildlife will suffer, but also the local communities, and you know, politics. Sadly, in this case, is what's driving it all.
So I guess my last question for today is, what can people, most of the people who listen to this radio program are in the United States, but what can people both in and outside of the United States do to assist you and more broadly assist giraffes?
I mean, it's really important to get the message out there. As we say, we used to call them the forgotten megafauna or forgotten giants. In the last few months, giraffe got a little bit of media attention, so we struggle a bit with selling this term, but people just don't know much about giraffe. And most people, even people who work in conservation, are very surprised if you tell them giraffe are actually in danger. So just getting the message out there is the first step to saving giraffe. But in the end, we always say giraffe can only be saved in Africa. So not everyone can come and physically help, but you can support programs and you can support organizations like us and help us work with governments and all our local partners to save giraffe here in Africa on the ground.
So there's different mechanisms and ways to do that. We have an Adopt a Giraffe program. So this is a program where, you know, someone living in, you know, the States can go online to the giraffe website and be able to provide a financial support, and they'll get quarterly reports and updates on what's happening to that giraffe and the giraffe in the population. And this really helps us to be able to do the work on the ground. What I'd also encourage, we have a thing called World Giraffe Day. We created a couple of years ago. It's the 21st of June, so it's the longest day for the tallest animal. And this is a really good awareness opportunity to get the message out there. And I would encourage people to go to their zoo knock on their door and say, what are you as a zoo doing to help save giraffe? Your giraffe are ambassadors for those in the wild. Can we not raise some money, some support, get the message out there, partner with Giraffe Conservation Foundation or others working with giraffe across Africa? So the bottom line is get the message, get some dollars in the door, and hopefully we can make that difference.
So I do have, even though I said that was the last question, I now have another last question, which is for each of you, can you, if you can think of one, can you tell me either your favorite story about a giraffe, about interaction with a giraffe or seeing a giraffe do something, or your favorite fact about a giraffe or giraffes in general? Just something you think is really cool.
I mean, I think the most amazing thing we have done in giraffe conservation was the translocation of 20 giraffe across the Nile River in Uganda. It was we called it Operation Twigger. It was funded by funding from World Giraffe Day 2015. And we worked with partners. It was government officials, rangers from the Uganda government. We brought a vet from here from Namibia with us. We had a vet from America. We had some volunteers. We had the gorilla vets working with us, university students, and we captured giraffe and then put them in a truck and drove them to the Nile River, put them on a little ferry and shipped them over to the other side of the river. I mean, that was an amazing experience. That was just such a It was such a great conservation project, but also just working with partners that we talk a lot about working with partners, as you will have heard, but a lot of it is by email and by phone, but really on the ground working with partners, that was pretty amazing.
And I think, you know, I agree with Steph, but one of the things, you know, what we do is we put, you know, GPS satellite collars on a lot of animals. And for the last, well, it's been now 17 years, we've been designing and redesigning these collars. And we're now come up with just a little one that sits on the ossicone, which is essentially the horn equivalent of the giraffe. But putting that on is one thing, but being able to sit there, touch a giraffe, smell a giraffe, they really smell. I mean, big male giraffe are called stink bulls for a reason. And I never had that clue. You know, driving around on safari, you get these smells out there and you're like, oh, what's that? But being up close and personal with touching a giraffe, which is just amazing, and finding out that, sadly, they don't smell as good as you think they should.
Well, that seems as good a note as any to end on. So I would like to thank you for your work, and I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guests today have been Stephanie Fennessy and Julian Fennessy. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.